podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the Anfield Wrap. Neil Atkinson, Gareth Roberts, Mel Reddy and Stu Wright with you to talk about Liverpool versus Watford, or more accurately, Watford versus Liverpool, Watford 3, Liverpool 3. And Gareth, I'll start with you, really. Get straight in. It's strange that we probably would all be more sound with a turgid 1-1. We got an exciting 3-3. As ever, football matches tell their own stories and you draw conclusions from them.
Yeah, it's all about the context of the way it went, really, isn't it? I think, first game of the season, the Coutinho situation, everything else, it kind of felt like we needed a performance and a result to sort of clear the decks and give everyone a little bit of a positive boost, and we didn't get that. But we were close to it, and I think that's what's so frustrating about it. You know, to play as abject as they did in the first half, and then to bring it back and get into the game and get themselves in a winning position after playing some good stuff and scoring good goals, and then to throw it away so stupidly again. It was hard to take, and it felt like a defeat. I actually woke up on Sunday. I mean, Bea might have helped this situation, but I actually woke up on Sunday thinking we got beat for a moment. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It felt that way, and it was totally deflating. And it's a worry. It's a worry because it rolls into Hoffenheim now, and you kind of wonder how much the transfer request and the behaviour of Coutinho's affected everyone. Because I think not only would it be in the heads of the players, no matter what the manager says to them, but also it would be in the heads of Watford. I think you look at the way Watford come out in that game, and I think they could sense blood, and that they thought, you know, Liverpool might not be out of here, and so we'll get into them. And they got into us loads in that first half an hour or so. We couldn't cope with it.
It's also that frustration that you can score 3 goals and still not win a game.
Yeah.
I think that's the
away
issue.
From home.
You know, Neil, your point of you take a 1-1 draw, because you do think to yourself, it is the first game of the season, so naturally sometimes teams are not completely at it yet. They grow into the competitiveness of things. And so, yeah, if it was a 1-1, you just write it off as one of those.
Well, in a way, a point away from home is always a point away from home, if you know what I mean. And so you always say, well, that's not bad. That's all right. But it was just the manner of it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is the way everything conspired on the pitch. Like we say, that the defensive failings, again, that your attack can go on and bail you out. And even though you're not performing well, can do what they're supposed to do. And then, you know, at the other end of the pitch. And it is a combination of bad defending and bad luck, but still I think bad defending invites more bad luck than it does good. And yeah, it was just the worst way, I think, to start the season, to have those familiar problems glaring at you again, like you said, Robbo, given everything else that's gone on in the last week.
Jim.
Yeah, that's the hope that kills you, isn't it, really? I mean, you've had 3 months of hope and we'll get something done and we'll move things forward. And then, you know, we go out and put a performance like that and we see a lot of the same old flaws, the same old ills there. And I think it's pretty clear now that the issues are systemic. The issues are within the ragged edge that we play on. And therefore, you've got to, when the same things keep happening time and time again within the way we play, you've got to think, okay, well, you've got a couple of choices here. Number one, change the personnel. Now, the manager's got he's always talking about the faith and trust that he's got within the personnel. I don't necessarily buy into that. You know, the Rafa Benitez quotes of football is a lie. It's all a controlled message, and it's all an element of, well, if he's got these lads and he's not been able to bring other ones in, and he's not going to slate them, is he? He's not going to destroy them. I mean, you look what's happened with the mood of Chelsea at the moment, with, you know, Conte's basically giving the players an excuse and they've gone out and done that. So I think one of the issues is personnel, and I'm not just talking about the defence here. Everything is getting laid at the door of the defence, but I think there's more to it than that. And the other issue is, the other choice you can do is, all right, well, you change your tactics, you change your formation. So Neil mentioned at the start of the show there that perhaps if we'd had a surged 1-1, we might feel a little bit different. And we saw a lot of those kind of dogged performances at the back end of last season. And we played in a different way. We were not on the ragged edge as we are, you know, usually under this manager. And I think you can either change your philosophy or you can change the way you set up your team. And we're playing with 2 fullbacks who are pushing very, very high up the pitch. There's a perfect example just prior to the first goal for Watford where Lovren is completely exposed because Trent is too high up the pitch.
Does well, Lovren?
He does well, Lovren. He's been slated, Lovren, in the game. And listen, I'm not his greatest fan, but I think...
In that instance, he does well. I don't think he had a good game, but in that instance, he did really well.
I think what Carragher said was also right, that you could have the best central defenders in the world and they're still going to be struggling with the same issues because they're being left exposed. And Trent, who did a lot of good in the game, not least the set pieces, but he did a lot of good, and there's a lot of excitement around this lad. But he was too high up the pitch in that moment, not putting that down to him. It's a system issue. It's the way we're set up to play. It's clear that the fullbacks are pushing high up the pitch. So if you do that, then you've got to appreciate the fact that you're leaving your two centre-halves exposed. So it's either a personnel issue and you get better centre-halves who can cope better in that situation, which I'm not sure you're necessarily going to get, or you change your formation, you throw a third centre-half in there and you play with wing-backs who will get up the pitch, or you drop a more defensive minded midfielder in there who plays and splits the centre-halves and is not just playing within there like we often see Henderson do that when we're on the ball.
We haven't really got one of them, have
we? We haven't. It's been noticeable that he's not gone after a DM since he's come into the team. And neither did Rodgers, for that matter. And I think if we play this way, if we get it right, we're going to look unbelievable.
I was just about to say that. You see, I think the issue is not the system itself, but the implementation of it, which Liverpool failed horribly at in all aspects of it. They invited Watford to expose their weaknesses instead of enhancing their strengths, because they weren't at it in the first half. At no point really in the first half did they look like themselves. And the only real period of play where I think Liverpool did what is expected of them is that Sadio Mane's goal. That is Liverpool. That is how Liverpool are supposed to play.
In Mane's goal, I just want to pick it up on that. In Mane's goal, you actually see one of the things that leads to the issue that Stu's saying.
Yeah.
So, for instance, Emre Can is on their fullback. He's that advanced. He's playing centre mid, and he's on their fullback, and he does brilliantly.
Yeah.
But, and this is I'm illustrating this as the pros and cons of this. If Chan's not there, we don't score.
Yeah.
But if Chan's pass isn't perfect, they turn around, they've got the ball back, and Chan is now 40 yards away from Henderson on one side of the pitch. Wijnaldum's 40 yards away from Henderson on the other side of the pitch, and they put a big ball forward, and there's massive holes.
Absolutely, that's the risk. But when the risk, you've seen the reward of that risk. You saw Liverpool play at the start of last season, and when they're on it, how well it works. And obviously the manager is backing the players out on the pitch, and absolutely, yes, personnel. Liverpool should have done a lot more in the transfer window than they have already. They've not ticked off two big weaknesses that they've assessed. It's still not sorted yet, and there's time's running out to sort that out. But the players he puts on the pitch that have worked in Hong Kong, that have worked in Germany on all these aspects, all these elements, the defending of set pieces and all that, he's backing them to, with all that, with another year of experience, to implement what they need to do better. They were poor. They were really, really poor. And I think as much as we pick on, we can't have it all our own way. We can't want Liverpool to be this exceptional, explosive force, and then also want them to be the best team ever at defending. You have to find the balance, yes, which they didn't obviously have against Watford, but I don't think you just take the system and throw it away.
Balance is everything. Yeah. You look at... Okay, I'm going to mention Tottenham here, who they don't play with the same level of threat as we do, but I'd say there's noticeably a better balance there. And their fullbacks play very high up the pitch. We saw last year at Walker and Rose, great attacking threat. So what did he do? He's got Dyer who can slot in and be a third centre-half. And I just think there's a search on to get better balance, because one of two things is happening here. Either what the manager is asking the players to do how many times have we heard them talk about closing down half spaces? Well, what Neil just described then about the spaces in between the midfield, that's the half spaces, isn't it? When we see it for Watford's second goal, Gini Wijnaldum, he left the space like a bus could drive through, instead of moving across to support and close the space down between him and where Emre Can and Henderson were trying to close down the ball. And that led to the goal. What the manager is asking the players to do is either too difficult, or it's too difficult for these players to do consistently, and that's where it's a personnel issue. So I think there's a choice there. There's a choice that's either strategic and tactical, if you're going to work with these players, or it's a case of, I know that this system can work, I know that we can get the balance within it, but I just need the correct personnel who can execute it consistently. And we're just... That balance isn't there consistently, and you do feel at times, as much as we can be electric, we can also be kamikaze.
Yeah. We also have to, I think, point out the fact that these creative players were absent. So we had no Lallana and no Coutinho, which obviously solves the issue of the first half, where Liverpool just had absolutely nothing in possession. The midfield was non-existent. There was no setting off tempo of play or anything. Liverpool have an incredible forward line. Mane, Salah and Firmino are absolute fire. I think everyone knows that. It's pointless, though, if you can't play the ball to them. And I think that issue there then put the pressure on their weakness, which is what I'm saying. The fact that you can't impose yourself on the opposition in the way you want to then encourages them to come, okay, you're not doing what you're meant to do or what you want to do with us, so we'll just do what we want to do. And I think the fact that Liverpool just could not in any way inject any sort of inventiveness or properly supply their attackers. I think Salah ended the first half with 11 touches. If that is, you've got dynamite there and you've just not playing the ball to him. And those annoying clip balls over the top with no thought behind them, just continuously doing it without understanding whether it's the right time to do it. Are the centre backs exposed enough to play that ball?
But I think part of that, we'll get off talk in a minute, he's having a lovely time. Yeah. I think part of that though is the idea there, and I think that's why you see Chan and Ronaldo where they are, because the idea is you're turning them around, you panic them. If the ball comes off, great,
you're
in behind. If the ball doesn't come off, Chan and Wijnaldum should be winning those seconds, and they're picking up the bits, and then that's the idea that you're pressing. Suddenly you've got the ball, you're 10, 15, 20 yards minimum into their half of the pitch. And I thought that was what the plan was. So that's one of the reasons why Chan and Wijnaldum are 20, 30 yards away from Henderson, is that that's the idea here. So they get it, they run. Yeah, but then what was happening was they weren't picking those seconds up. Liverpool weren't picking those seconds
absolutely
up. Then it's coming back at them, and Henderson's going, hang on, lads, this fella's 9'3". And all of these fellas are around and they know exactly what they're doing, and they're actually winning their second balls, and we're in real trouble here. And I thought Henderson was really poor first half, and he was on his own, but he was still really, really poor. A couple more tactical fouls in there wouldn't have gone amiss. But my point is more, I think that is the plan. But you know what I mean? Certainly in the absence of Coutinho, I thought that was the plan first half.
The plan makes sense. The like we've said, the execution of it is completely flawed, because even winning the ball back is one thing. When you win the ball back, you've got to know what you're going to do with it. And there wasn't enough good stuff done in possession, which, again, just changes the balance of play in Watford's favour, because you're not punishing them in any way. You're winning possession and then not doing anything. So that's why I think there was so much frustration over the performance, and that's why it felt like a defeat, because you know what it's supposed to look like, you know how it's supposed to be, you can tell what the intention was, but you're looking at it and you're thinking, has nothing been learnt? Or
I just still worry about the sort of mental fragility here, about, you know, I wrote something saying, you know, when you watch your team on the first day of the season, what you want is not to be saying that's the same team again, that's the same old Liverpool. That's, you said at the top, Stu, about you're seeing the same problems again, and they haven't been remedied. And I think, when you see you've still got that goalkeeper, you've got Albi Moreno back in the side, you've got Lovren in the side, all those three, our supporter base doesn't trust them at all. And I wonder whether the players in the team trust them as well, for the same reasons. And you know, there's fingerprints, certainly Mignolet, on two of those goals, I'd say. I've watched them over and over again this morning, and just think he looks poor on a couple of them again. And if we're having a goalkeeper chat again, I'm wondering why we're having it again. And I'm wondering, to be honest, why Moreno's back on the side. I didn't think he did that badly in general, but I just think in general the trust with him's gone. I think he's had his chance, he didn't take it. And this idea that he can come back and be this super player is hard to wash. And you know, pulled some. I had a look before we walked in here to see what Klopp's bought since he's been here, and he's bought 11 players since he's been at Liverpool, but two of those are counted as being Corker, and he was the other one. It was Mad Meninga. So that's 9. We're now down to 9. Like, what is the fear of recruitment here? Because that's what it's starting to feel like. I don't understand why we can't go out and get top-quality players that improve this side. Because you're not telling me Moreno's anywhere near the best left-back in the country. You're not telling me Lovren's anywhere near the best centre-half either. The keeper does dull doubts over. And so if we're continually talking about easy goals, stupid goals, conceding goals, you know, we can talk about the system, and I get that. And I really enjoyed the Redknapp v Carragher clip. It was brilliant. And I urge anyone to have a look at it who hasn't. But it's both, isn't it? Is probably the answer.
It is, yeah.
It's both. I mean, I loved Carragher had him off, which I would fully expect. But it's both. It's both. You can tweak a system, but you also need to have trust around the players. And every time we've got a corner, there's absolute fear from every Liverpool fan in the ground. There looks to be absolute fear from every Liverpool player as well. They don't know what they're doing.
I wonder if, and listen, I'm just completely speculating here, but ultimately, a lot of those players weren't bought by the manager, right? They were bought by the guy who's the sporting director.
Michael Edwards.
And we've all heard about his spreadsheets and his graphs and all that. Is it a case, I wonder, of the reticence to buy or comes from Michael Edwards still rates the players that he's bought but disagrees with the way that they're being played? And if that's the case, if there's any kind of disconnection between the manager and the sporting director, and I'm not saying there is, but what I'm pointing out is there can be, that can happen at clubs, that in a variety of different sports you see it. I'm actually a big fan of the film Moneyball, and you see it there in operation. There's a disconnect between a coach and actually the sporting director there in the players that have been bought and how they're being put out on the pitch. And you know, Lovren's a perfect case and example. You look at the way Lovren played at Southampton, where he had two defensive midfielders in front of him. He played a different way. He looked brilliant. He's come to Liverpool, played a different system, and never really been able to show the same kind of form.
Just to sort of pull this back, you can also say that these are players who were bought by a previous manager. But he's had long enough to decide, you know, you can take...
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's had long enough to decide whether or not he wants to stick with them. And Liverpool have given Lovren an increased contract and more money. And I refuse to believe that that's done without Jurgen Klopp saying, yeah, I'm all right with this fella to get an increased contract and more money. That's just, you know, if Klopp's decided he doesn't fancy him, then he's decided he doesn't fancy him, and then he's able to say, well, I just don't fancy him. But at which point you don't give him an increased contract and more money. And where I think this gets, because trust me, I nothing will make me happier than Michael Edwards did an interview with The Echo and actually let his voice be heard in public at some point. And in fact, I think it's little short of negligent that hasn't happened.
It's weird,
to be honest with you. You know, it's just plain wrong that there's someone who's that intimately involved in the football club who just seemingly gets away without ever having to speak publicly. However, the manager himself has now had long enough with a number of these players, and the reticence to buy does appear to be his reticence to buy. It doesn't appear to be the club's reticence to buy.
But then on the other hand, though, as well, the other point on that is that does this continue? Like, I look at Liverpool now, and when I'm lying awake at night thinking about it, there's the could have been and the what might be, and that's continually in my head now about this Liverpool. So we know that this summer they've gone big on trying to sign two players. Both of those players, the money that was mentioned for Van Dijk and for Keita, is enough money to say to me they're starters. They're starters in the 11. And so now, again, is that feeding into the conscience of everyone? Like, are people playing there going, doesn't actually want me, though. I'm not first team here, because he wanted him. He wanted him and he didn't get him. And now he's having to start the season. It's almost like a plan B. It's not, the summer didn't go how Klopp wanted, ideally. And certainly that lineup that we had against Watford isn't his dream lineup for the Watford game, both in terms of recruitment and in terms of injuries, like Mel mentioned. So that's got to be taken into consideration.
I think any player thinking that way shouldn't be at a club like Liverpool then, because.
But they're human now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
You've got the opportunity. Those players haven't come in. You've got the opportunity to show the manager why you shouldn't be looking at other players.
And you've been working with them all summer.
Exactly, or why I can do the job effectively. You've got a window there. So if that's the kind of thinking, then... And I mean, if you listen to all the interviews they've given during pre-season, they want better players to come in. They think it's good for the squad if better players come in. And I don't think anyone you know, would argue any different, any one of us. I think also Jurgen Klopp makes it quite clear when he doesn't, when he doesn't really fancy a player, or when he's not really convinced by a player, or and so I don't think there's any sort of that, any sense of him being forced to use players.
Well, you
that
say
he doesn't
that
want to use.
You say that though, but those quotes the other week, I just thought for one of the first times ever when I've watched a Jurgen Klopp press conference, I thought you're taking the piss out of us now. Saying like Milner's another midfielder, and I'm happy with the defenders I've got and all that. You're not, mate.
He's controlling the message. That's what he says.
Yeah, and I understand that, and I understand. And obviously, I've worked in it myself, and I get about what you say in public and what you don't. But nevertheless, it's just the wrong. It's just the wrong thing to say for me, because every fan out there saw those comments and thought, "Oh, fuck off." Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Because it doesn't serve any purpose. We know that you wanted to buy Van Dijk. We know that you wanted to buy Keita. So don't tell us that what we've ended up with is all right, because it's not, because it's not what you wanted, ideally. And so
he has also continuously said, and I think a lot of the reaction people get sometimes is because he's tired of answering the same question over and over. Because he said a number of times, we are open until the 31st of August. We are looking, we are working on things. We are open to doing business until the 31st of August. If you go back now over the last, I don't know, 3 or maybe 4 weeks, you'll probably find 8, 9, 10 examples of him saying those words, that we're open, we've got time in the transfer window, we are looking to improve things. I think just the other day he admitted they're still looking at a midfielder, for example. Yeah. And I think it's because every single press conference, it's the same question. He's like, well, let me just say this, and hopefully by saying this, they don't ask again. And obviously, there's also the sense of, like you said, giving the players confidence, the players that are already there, because they are human, and they do start, you know, thinking about their own position in the team and all that stuff. So I was annoyed as well reading that. But I don't think for one second he's completely satisfied with everything at the moment. I don't think anyone is. I think obviously they wanted to bring in two really, really good players who fit the system. That hasn't happened yet. There's still time to make it happen, you know, in the window, but this is why, and we'll probably come on to Coutinho, this is why I can't for the life of me understand anyone saying, let him go, because Liverpool still have a lot of work to do in that window, and giving them something else to do when it's not gone that
feels
well
like you're writing
so
the
far.
Season off if you do that, yeah. To be honest. I mean, I can't.
Well, come on, I want to come on to Coutinho in a minute.
Okay,
we're going to do Coutinho. I want to get back to the actual game that we saw itself. I'll go back to you, Gareth, on it. Is the bit of the game that I look back on in hindsight and I'm most frustrated with, it isn't even the goal in the last minute. The goal in the last minute, I think there's three or four factors. I'm not even that annoyed about the corner. I'm not even that annoyed about the offside. They should clear the previous free kick. That's not great. We'll come on to that in a second.
Comes off massive as well, you know, when you watch it back. So it's not like it's not clear.
None of it's great, yeah. And none of it's easy. I'm most annoyed. They get 1-1, and they don't deserve to get 1-1, but they get 1-1 with a great goal, and they open them up, and they've got them 1-1. And I just think, and last season, the end of last season, I just think get to half-time now, boys.
Mm.
Half-time at 1-1's absolutely fine, and Liverpool are absolute rubbish from the kick-off at 1-1. I mean, you know, the 2 minutes, I think it is, from the kick-off to that ball being in the back of the net, there's about 9 players culpable, including the captain, that I'm watching it going, there's 9 of you that should be doing better across the course of 2 minutes of football. And that's just, it's just untenable and it's daft. Yeah. It's a real, let's just get out, boys, get up. Let's make them think about it a little bit. And instead, we invite them on. We're amateurish. We give them a really cheap throw-in when the ball should end up in their half. Every little bit of just getting through 90 seconds, 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes of football, Sunday league stuff, every little bit of that doesn't happen.
I know. And that's another theme, though, isn't it, about Liverpool, I think? And it's a theme, you know, when you do concede in the way they do as well, because it's like, you know, really basic stuff, like you said, Sunday league, like just keep it away from your goal, you know, keep it up front, someone hold it up, you know, Origi comes on and doesn't do nothing, you can't hold it up, but why didn't you bring Solanke on? He might have been better at holding up. I don't know, but the ball wasn't sticking all game, hardly. There's a patch, obviously, when Liverpool get in, they score the goals. But first half, they couldn't get out. There was no out ball. there was nothing was sticking. There were so many players that seemed off the game. It was unbelievable. And, you know, we mentioned Salah earlier. I thought he'd come into it, but actually thought he was struggling when he got the ball. And maybe that's why he wasn't getting the ball, because there's a couple of times, you know, there's one where he's in space and he just needs to take a touch and he's trying to do a first-time cross and it's like, lad, you know, just take the touch. There's another one, you know, bit of a poor shot, and he was struggling to get himself in it. But there was just nerves right through the side all the way through it, real anxiousness about it. And I wonder when, you know, Mel mentioned the link to a midfielder. I think it may be telling that he actually said experienced, used the word experienced. And I wonder whether that's something he's seeing as a trait that's needed in this side. Because I think we need that. I'd like to see someone a little bit of an older head who can do what you're saying and say, lads, just take five of you. Win a stupid free kick. You know, boot it out of play. Put, you know, tie your laces, fall over. You know, all the things that Chelsea do and I've done for years. Do them things. Control the game a bit. Use a bit of nous. And that's not a new conversation again about Liverpool, is it?
It's not a new conversation, Stu. But they were doing that at the end of last season. And that's my frustration. You know, you look at those away games at the end of last season and there's so much, you know, there's so much gnarl and there's so much, right, this is how we just get through the next 5 to 10, all the way through. You know, Watford away is actually a great example where practically nothing happens in the second half of Watford away last season. Liverpool ensure that's the case. It's only late on when they absolutely lash the kitchen sink, they get themselves a decent opportunity. But I was watching that, you know, just to focus on that first half patch there. I was just thinking, boys, this isn't that difficult. You know, you should all know what you're doing. I think, listen, Watford were clever, and I think it's important to say Watford were well set up. They cut the passing lanes really cleverly. They were, when we're all saying it was difficult to hold it up, I kept seeing Firmino coming deep, and it was like Watford were tempting Liverpool to play the ball into Firmino's feet, as if to say, but they had two lads either side who would have come and scissored it straight away. And, you know, it looked like they knew what they were doing, Watford, for half an hour especially. They knew what they were doing. It's important to say that. But, you know, you want to see the Liverpool side solve those problems, to be honest with you. And first half especially, and as I say, in that period after they go 1-1 to 2-1 all the way through to half-time, they just didn't look like solving them.
You're absolutely right that I think the Watford manager had set his team up right and they'd done the job. And, you know, they were very good tactically. And it gave Liverpool, you could see in the first 5-10 minutes... You could see our midfield in particular looking like they didn't have answers to questions that they were being asked. And there was a case of you know, us not being first to the second ball repeatedly. And it felt a little bit like, not, it didn't feel as bad as that first trip that Klopp had to Watford a couple of years ago, but there was an element of us being bullied, I felt, in midfield. You did feel like we were second to Everton. And were we just too complacent, too lethargic going into it? I mean, you'd never think so first game of the season, but there's a build-up, isn't it, towards first of the game of the season where there's an excitement of what we're going to do. And I don't think Watford probably thought as much necessarily just focused on themselves. I think they focused on us, how we're going to stop them, because they're Liverpool. We're going to stop them and then we'll play off that. And I don't think we probably paid them the same level of respect. And maybe we shouldn't anyway, because we are Liverpool. But the midfield found that hard, and I do think what you were saying then, Gareth, about experience in there, I've been saying for a long time, we need a general. We need someone in there who's actually going to, you know, grab the game by the throat and maybe grab some of the players by the throat in the dressing room and have a bit of accountability, point some fingers. And this is not me decrying Henderson in any shape, way or form, because I think he's a great player, I think he's a really good leader, I think he's a good captain. But I do think we're missing more characters and bigger characters in there.
A nasty bastard, maybe.
Yeah, we are. That's what we need.
I mean, I always refer to type on this, and sorry for regular listeners, but I mean, like a Mascherano or something doesn't let some of those things happen, I don't think, at times.
But unfortunately, there's less of them in the modern game.
Yeah. You can't get away with as much now.
Yeah,
and all that.
Yeah, and perhaps the nastiness isn't necessarily what you do into the opposition's ankle. It's more the case of the accountability that you're holding, you know, amongst your teammates.
But it's sort of like that lung busting thing though as well, where you know you're not giving up a lost cause, if you like. I mean, I think it's the second goal. If you watch Henderson on that, he's just not great. Him and Chan, I think, try and put a challenge in between them over on the line, and then they don't win it. and the ball goes behind him, for me, he should be following that in. He should be following that in, and he might be able to get involved again in another phase of play and get another challenge
He's just jogging, watching. I also laid the blame's a harsh word. No, it's not. But I laid the blame at Genie's door early for that.
Because,
you know, Emery, Chan and Henderson, rightly or wrongly, they've gone over to close down the ball, and they've lost. You can lose a duel. But what Genie hadn't done,
he wasn't behind them.
You've got to move. You're on a piece of string, aren't you? And the gap that
he'd
switched off. But not only that, when he realised, too late, but when he realised, what was the lad who scored?
Dakota.
When he came through the space, and then, if you like, in the second phase of play, started that move that led to him finishing it off. Genie then saw that and started to track him, started to follow him. But as he entered the box, stopped. And the lad then had a free tapping. And so that's where I come down to leadership. That's where I come down to midfielders who aren't, as you say, they're not giving up. There's experience, there's know-how. And actually, when I was talking to Mel before about, okay, if it's a personnel issue or a system issue, we're talking between those two things. Is the personnel that we've got good enough, sharp enough to execute what the manager is asking of them all the time? And that's where I came back to that. And for the Wijnaldum issue there was just a perfect example of that for me.
On the idea of the way the game starts, Mel, last season, I think it was a recurring theme, we were having conversations saying we're not starting fast enough. And Watford there, they basically... And I said all the way through last season, if I was setting up a side to play against Liverpool, I'd gamble all my chips on the first half an hour.
Yeah.
I'd put all my energy on the first half an hour. That's what I'd look to do. And that's exactly what Watford did do. And that, to me, is frustrating in that it was as though we'd never really thought through the notion we were going to have to win the right to play. Yeah. I don't even think it's necessarily a character issue or anything like that. I just think Liverpool, yet again, because it's right the way through last season, and again, the managers presided over it, they've repeatedly started just a bit too slow for me. And that game's another example of starting just a bit too slow, not winning the right to play, not getting through the first 10, not looking to move it up, not saying to Watford, you can put all your energy in the first half an hour, we'll just kill it and then we'll beat you as the game wears on.
Yeah. Liverpool were way, way, way too passive in everything. Out of possession, in possession, every duel. And I think Klopp referenced making real challenges.
Yeah.
He said that's something that needs to happen. And I think he also, the other term he uses is 100% legal aggression. So just, there's no point challenging for a second ball or whatever if you're not really going for it. If you only half-heartedly or 70% or 80% going for it, in the Premier League, you won't get anywhere with that sort of behaviour. And everything that... I just kept looking at it and I was like... Every single move, I was like, too passive there, too passive there, too passive there. Every phase of play. And when you are passive, and I think in the first minute, Okaka puts pressure immediately on Lovren. Like, you know, gets physical with Lovren and then Mignolet quite quickly to let them know, yeah, this is going to be one of those games. And how from there they continue to just be so accepting of the situation, so accepting that they were going to get bullied, so accepting that they weren't going to have it all their own way. It's just beyond me. That was one of the most annoying elements of it, that they were just willing to go along with everything. And that's why I referenced the Mane goal, because Sadio just said, not having any of this. I'm going to get the ball, drive possession on, going to play a pass, going to receive it, going to move, do all the things I'm supposed to do. This is how we're supposed to play, lads. Let's remember. And, you know, Firmino excellent in the second half. But it's just, you can't continuously let that happen. And
yeah.
The other thing that Atco mentioned was the mistakes, the just not thinking through the game. And Crowd's, one of the things he said was, football is a game of mistake management. You will make mistakes. You can't avoid making mistakes in football. Both teams will make mistakes. It's about managing them, like, you know, limiting them and learning from them. And Liverpool were just not, A, limiting them, or B, learning from them. And I think, you know, when we're trying to assign blame, I think with everything, you can, you know, watch a clip back of the goal and you can slow it down through so many phases of play and you'll be able to pick out so many poor decisions in the build-up from a number of players, and I think that's what makes it so hard. When you're losing all your individual battles all over the place, it just compounds how much work you've got to do, and then you're all you're basically always trailing the play because you've done a bad mistake there, wrong decision there, da-da-da.
It's management, isn't it, Jordan? The game is the theme. That's the theme of what we're all saying here.
That's what I was just about to say to you. One of my frustrations is either that Wijnaldum or Chan, Henderson doesn't get a grip of Wijnaldum or Chan and say to them after whatever period of the game, just come and get back here next to me.
Exactly.
Just get back here next to me for five and then we'll sort it out on the one hand. Or that they themselves don't think, I'll just get him back next to him there. Because I keep looking around and he's got three men around him to win a second ball because their centre forward's occupying both of our centre halves. So Henderson doesn't, because I think it's so system orientated, Henderson doesn't want to break the system because this is the way we play, this is the way the gaffer wants us to play. And they're thinking, well, we're doing what the gaffer's told us to do. But I think someone at some point, they're either, it's Henderson screaming at them and saying, you just get here and give me a hand for five. And that's what you were about to say, so I'm sorry for trampling on you.
No,
but
exactly,
I was fuming with the day when Mel was talking. But just do a bit of that, lads.
Yeah, exactly.
Just get through 5 minutes.
So, yeah, and Watford come out flying and getting stuck in and being physical and doing all that. So sound, you know, like I said before, we'll just go down then, win a few free kicks, break up their tempo, you know, work your way into the game and then realise when it's the time to go for it, right? We've got a little guy. So, you know, you saw Watford tired, didn't you, second half? That's one of the reasons, you know, Liverpool did play better, but also Watford tired. Like, they couldn't carry on that press and that physical thing that they were doing.
Akaka was hands on hips on 20.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, we messaged about that, didn't we? And it was like, you know, so, again, reach that point, don't concede, reach that point and then notice then, right, they haven't got it now. And here we go, lads, go.
We're not talking about, we're talking about Henderson, Chan and Wijnaldum there. You mentioned experience before, us needing, you know, the manager saying we perhaps need an experienced head in there. Which one of them is inexperienced? Do you know what I mean? What I'm getting at is that game management issue. They should be doing that.
I know, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We don't need an old head. The amount of games that Henderson's had for Liverpool, but you're talking about top flight games.
They've also shown before that they can do it, as we said, the back end of last season. I think this is why he looks so frustrated, Klopp, afterwards, is because this is... Fellas, you know how to do this. You should know how to do this. And I can't deal with the fact that they've not done something because they're worried about the system. Or I can't take that point. Because even when they receive instructions and stuff, it's not... They don't get this flurry of information like you have to do exactly this. It's, lads, here are the spaces we can expose. Here's where we can turn them around. You know, very basic things and assess the game.
My Wijnaldum and Chan thing was they wanted to go and enjoy themselves too much. That was genuinely my frustration. They wanted to be playing in their half too much.
I was just
going to
say that. Like, they're all, you know, Henderson's the only one really, and even then he's been transformed into that role. But the three of them, none of them are really defensively minded in the careers, are they? You know, and I think, you know, Chan loves getting forward. He loves doing his tank thing where he's bombing down the wing, and that touch he made and that run he made was quality. But that can't make up for the fact that he's not on the scene when we need him to defend. And you know, and Wijnaldum's being a number 10 and all that sort of thing. And so, you know, again, it's a new thing for him to be asked to do.
They all want
this
to
amount of defence. Yeah. They all want to do the nice stuff and get involved and play pretty football on the edge of their box and score the boss goals, which they did do. But they've got to be able to do the other stuff as well. They've got to be able to dig in. Because
they've got to enjoy it.
But there's another like 6-7 sides that are going to do exactly the same thing as Watford.
Minimum.
You know, I mean, made me laugh. Like, I've only caught highlights of most of the other games, but like, West Brom have signed even more Crocs. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And it's like, Pulis is not changing the way he plays at any point. I'd imagine if you go to a training session, say it lasts for an hour, fucking 45 minutes is doing set pieces. Do you know what I mean? And so when Liverpool play them, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be the same again and the same again. So it's again, the frustration is, I think, that this early in the season, you're able to say the phrase, rightly or wrongly, or allow everyone else to say the phrase in football, same old Liverpool.
Well, my frustration is, and I've got it down on the agenda here, is that the midfield's too flat. And this is where I do actually, while I thought he was poor first half especially, I do sort of cross Henderson off this list. I mean Chan and Wijnaldum. And what I mean is, bar the goal, and you always sound like an idiot when you say bar the goal, but bar the goal, I didn't see how Chan and Wijnaldum were helping the front three.
At all.
And I didn't see how they were helping the defence. Yeah. And if you're in the midfield and I can't say, well, you could see how he was, say yeah. what you want, he neglected his defensive duties, but he didn't half make a lot happen.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're at least getting somewhere. Or, well, I didn't feel like he got involved and joined enough. But that said, you know what I mean, at least he was there on the scene when we needed him. And I think Henderson, as I say, I thought he was really poor first half especially. But at least you were able to say, well, he's trying to help the defence. At least you could see it was on his list of things to do. whereas, you know, that was watching the rest of them, I was just thinking, lads, you're not actually... This attack feels completely disjointed. You're not supplementing it. And meanwhile, there's all sorts happening back here that could do with another pair of hands. Absolutely all sorts.
Yeah. And the point you were making that Emery and Genie wanted to, you know, do all the nice stuff, the attacking stuff. You know what? It's fine if you do it well, lads, because then you are actually supplementing the attack and you are playing to your strengths and you are putting all the pressure on them and you are giving them problems to solve. But that just didn't happen. That midfield was so painful. It was really, really painful in both elements. And I know, like, you know, people will say, I think... Klopp's mentioned this before as well, but when you talk about defence, you shouldn't just think about the defenders. And I think that was an excellent example on Saturday of how the defence just...
was left.
They were done no favours at all by the midfield. And neither was the attack, really.
Second half, to accentuate some positives before we move on to talk about Coutinho, Stu. I thought Firmino's... half an hour of Firmino's second half performance was just... staggering, to be honest with you. All the things that we didn't see enough of first half were there. You could see him link in play, the movements just tremendous, the touch, bringing everyone into the game. I thought it was a performance. I thought of when you talk about sort of character and leadership, I thought you saw that insofar as you can from a lad who plays centre forward. He just showed, got it, won his little battles, won his free kicks when he needed to, turned them round. He scores the pen, steps up and scores the pen, plays the ball through for Salah. That's right, isn't it? He plays the ball through for Salah for the pen. And then get on the third. It's a lovely dink of the keeper. I think it might just have crept in, but it sounds. I thought he was great second half, and I think he's. I actually thought we got poorer when he went off, even though we had clearly tired because he's at the centre of everything that we do well, and he just wants the ball.
Tell you what, you took everything I could possibly say about Firmino's performance.
Sorry, mate. Yeah. I really wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, he was strong, wasn't he?
Yeah. It's night tackle. It's night tackle. What do you reckon, Mel?
Well, what I will say, the one probably thing you haven't covered there is, I think, I've said this before on shows that I actually think Firmino is one of the most intelligent centre forwards, and I do think we've got to start calling him a centre forward now. He's one of the most intelligent centre forwards around. I really mean that in the game. I look at the decision making that he has game to game, and we've all seen he can have a bad game. He can go missing in the first half. I don't think he was particularly great, but as you say there, you know, the response to whatever was said in the dressing room, he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant, and it's just the level of intelligence with him. I think he's one of these players that is so underrated by opposing fans and actually by opposing teams. I still, you know, a few years on, don't think
sometimes
that
even
defenders.
Home fans,
yeah, I don't think defenders have necessarily got wise to him because he hasn't got anything definitive. You think he's not that quick, he doesn't look that big, he hasn't got a trick particularly. What is it? But I really think it comes down to he's got a bit of everything, but what he's got absolutely loads of is the stuff you can't see. It's what's going on between his ears. I think he's 10 steps ahead of most players in what's going on around him, but also in what needs to be done in closing down those spaces and winning the ball back in starting moves. I mean, he's our first line of the press. People always talk about Lallana being that, but it's Firmino. It's Firmino. And he had a cracking second half. I echo everything that Neil said.
it's the two things I think we just spoke about, the passiveness and mistake management or decision making. And I think second half he comes out and he's like, right, no more passiveness. If I'm not going to get the ball from midfield, it's okay. I'm going to make things happen myself. I'm going to make things happen for those around me. And I'm going to make intelligent decisions because that's what he does. He's got a great understanding of space, of how his teammates are going to use the space or what kind of ball they need from him in that sort of space. And he just sort of ties everything together, forces things to happen. And yeah, as we've all said, Neil's boxed off that performance pretty emphatically. But it's I think it's really great to see him from to see it from him in that context, because we've seen it when Liverpool are, you know, aggressive and assertive. You can see him take the game away from teams then as well, or help in that scenario. But I think in this case where, you know, you're looking around and you're thinking, who is going to make things happen? It's not really going to be the midfield. And I think also in the goals, we have to say that the defenders play the balls in, the initial balls in. So, you know, they've at least contributed.
Kaiser scored at the weekend, didn't they?
Yeah. Towards helping at the end.
Shut up, Robbo.
Just saying.
Shut up, Robbo.
But with all the talk...
Tell him to shut up, Mel.
With all the talk of the other Brazilian at the moment dominating things, it was good to see Firmino show that he can also, you know, decide games, be the game changer.
Manager made a big fuss of him when he went off as well. I noticed that one. Was desperate to get a grip of him. And I wonder whether it's probably been difficult for Firmino, what with it being his mate, all of that Gareth and... All of that now seems, it seems a strange, troubling scenario. There's the manager's post-match comments, and I think they can be taken a number of different ways. I'm intrigued to find out what Mel thinks of them, but I think you and I are in agreement. I think it's difficult to read them in any sense other than the fact that the manager will probably now gladly let the player go, and he feels as though the club aren't going to do that. Is that what you think?
It was weird, wasn't it? Like, on this issue, he seemed to ask for permission, first of all, to even discuss it. And Matt McCann says, yeah, you can talk about it if you want. And so he starts talking about it. But he seemed... He can probably argue in hindsight, oh, I didn't quite sort of mean it that way. And I see in the Echo wrote something saying, no, he didn't mean it that way and all that sort of thing. But it was just a weird way to put things, to say, I've just got to accept what my bosses say. I've got bosses. I mean, why sort of bring that up? And like you say, you know, it's hard then not to look at it and put two and two together and say, well, is he saying, you know, the club have put that statement out and said he's categorically not for sale, but is he that let down by it? Because he starts the sentence by saying, the transfer request, I don't get it. And so that means, therefore, he's saying to me...
No, I think he said, I didn't get it, as in the transfer request wasn't sent to him.
No, I don't think he meant that. I took it, looking at his face and the way he said that, I thought he didn't get that because he knows put one in now. He doesn't get the behaviour is what I thought he meant by that. And then I thought the way he goes on is that, you know, you've done what you've done, and so I'm happy to let you go. That was how I took it. When I watched it, that was how I took it. And I've seen everyone... some people interpret it differently. But I thought even the fact that he isn't that clear on it is something in itself. He was narky anyway, you know, and some of that might be down to the results. But in general, it just seemed to me that he was saying, look, you've really let me down by doing that right then. And he has, because, you know, he's trying to get out by brute force. He's trying to upset Liverpool at the worst possible time, you know, emailing something over when everyone's about to leave for London for the first game of the season is not great behaviour. And however you want to paint it. And he's doing it because, well, I think there's a load of levels to it. So it'll piss the manager off. It'll piss the owners off. It'll piss fans off. There's loads of fans now saying, nah, just sell him, fuck him. And you kind of think, is that part of it as well? So, yeah, I mean, it's not great. And like I said before earlier on in the show, I think it does affect everything. You know, it affects how the fans feel. It affects how the players feel. And at the moment, right now, like Liverpool are just absolutely desperate for a result here. Like they've got to go to Hoffenheim and do something here, because this whole season feels like it's already like potentially falling off the wheels. And it's not the time of the season when you should be saying that. This is when we should all be dead happy and full of hope.
Stu and then Mel.
Yeah, just to... echo what Robbo said at the end there, it does feel like the last 2 weeks of August, the season's on the brink. You know, it does feel like there's going to be certain decisions that are made now that are going to dictate how we perform the rest of the season. And you know, Robbo said then about the manager looked pissed off. Well, it's going to be. I think it's been a transfer window which started full of hope. We were so excited about all the opportunities next year. We thought, get a couple, two or three of the right players in and we're going to challenge. You know, things are really moving forward. I mean, I was on a show with Gibbo a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying, oh, there's such a feel-good attitude within the club, and it was evident when you guys were on tour.
Yeah, you didn't feel like there was a problem, did you? You didn't feel like there was no problem child player, Sacco aside. There was no real sort of issues. And you had this stuff, and look, you know, there's different theories about how these things end up in papers and all that sort of thing. But let's just say that a trusted reporter about Liverpool FC put out there at the start of this summer that FSG were putting on the table the biggest kitty that the club had ever had to spend on transfers. That obviously raises expectations. Everyone rubs their hands together and says, good, because that's what Liverpool need. And then when we're at this end of the transfer window, with only a few days but left, there's not long to go now. Everyone, also as well, I think every club must be looking at Liverpool and going, they're getting desperate here. And so that doesn't help matters either. But, you know, can you blame anyone who's pissed off now as a fan?
And that's the thing. As the manager, he's got to be sat there thinking, well, we've not got who we wanted it in yet, and maybe something's going to happen if we get through the Champions League qualifying, and that's something I'm hoping. Maybe that's all going to roll on then. But he's saying, we haven't got who we wanted in. I've not been able to train them over the pre-season, even if we do get them in late. And then just before the season starts, arguably my best player, my creative outlet that is actually going to make that front three fly, he is actually going to be the one who's pulling the strings for them and really could shape our season. He does this. He does it, or whether it's him or it's his agents, whatever. He's done this. He's pulled the rug on us. And if this doesn't work out over the next 2 weeks the way we need it to work out, and I'm not just talking about Coutinho there, I'm talking about that and the incomings that we need, unless there is significant movements over the next couple of weeks, then I wouldn't blame a manager if he's sitting there thinking, well, this is a wasted year. This is a year where we're not going to move forward. And if anything, you look around, you think United look strong. United look strong. They were in the top four last year. They look strong. City look strong. Jesus, have they enhanced their squad?
And they've addressed their issues, both of those clubs.
Arsenal haven't got the Champions League, so we're in a similar position that we were in last year and can focus a bit more. And you look at it and you think, we were supposed to be making the next step, and Klopp will have been excited about that. And then just as you say, 24 hours before you're going for the first game and the rug is pulled.
Mel, he seems so angry with the footballer. That's the thing that I took from it. First, you know, whichever way you want to work out precisely what he does or doesn't mean by the comments, it's always worth remembering he speaks in his second language. He's a good communicator, but he speaks in his second language. However, the main thing I took from it was there's a level of absolute fury there with the footballer, and that becomes an impediment significantly towards the season if the manager himself, in conjunction with the footballer, if he does stay, if they can't find a way back from that, then that is problematic given the sort of manager he is. He is no Rafa Benitez.
Yeah.
He's very much his own man, and he sees trust and the group as the most important thing.
Yeah. I think when I heard the comments, and then when I thought about, when I read it back again, and then when I thought about it, there were a few things I concluded. He has been annoyed at this Coutinho question for a long time. I saw annoyance in the Audi Cup when he said, there is no interpretation of the word not. And there was a big back and forth with the journalist that asked that question there. You know, when he would say, how many times do you want me to say he's not for sale? I can't say it in any other way. There's no other interpretation. In fact, before that as well, I think it was in Hong Kong where he said, if I say he's not for selling, he's not for selling. I think this was another element of frustration that the owners have put out a definitive stance and he's getting asked about it, which again then touches on the, I've got bosses, my bosses are now telling you, which is why before the transfer request comes in and at his press conference, he was asked again about the statement and he said, the owners have said, I've been saying it all along, now the owners have said it, what more do you want? Why do you keep asking this question? So I think there's that. I also think he is completely annoyed at the result, for one, but more than that, the performance. So he's speaking already from a vexed emotional point of view. The other thing is, I think he is annoyed to hell with Coutinho because of the timing. And if you look at it, if you go back, Sacco, the Snapchat. Remember when Sacco put up the Snapchat rant? That was in the early hours, and Liverpool had a game that day. I think that game was Hull. He said there, the timing, however annoyed you are, timing is everything. So there will definitely be an element of frustration around when he decides to put that in, after the owners have already, again, made it clear, they've made it privately clear for the longest time now, that he's not going to be sold. But then again, we all continuously say, no one is more important than the club, right? So whether Klopp is frustrated, whether the owners are frustrated, whether Coutinho wants out, whatever, what is the most important thing for the club this summer in this entire scenario? In my opinion, I don't really care what Coutinho wants. I don't particularly care how Klopp feels in this current moment, I don't particularly care how he felt in that current moment when he was emotional. I don't particularly care if what the owners feel about optics or any of that. I care about what is the best solution now for Liverpool moving forward, given what has already happened so far in the transfer window, given how little time is left, and given the fact that they've had money, and that's meant nothing. They've had money to spend, they want to spend the money, and they can't. So in all this, no one is bigger than Liverpool, so what is best for Liverpool? And for me, I think they've got to get him to stay. They've got to stick by their definitive stance. Naturally, with a player wanting out, and if he's put the transfer request, he's agitating for the move, so he's got... I think what was annoying as well was the absolute nonsense about not having a great relationship with Klopp for 6 months, being subbed off often, all this absolute nonsense that's come out. That's obviously more, or just adding to the fire. But whatever happens, you find a way to work things out, because essentially it's World Cup year, or leading into World Cup year, so he's got to perform. Before Coutinho comes back to Melwood on July 11th, I think it was, and was buzzing. Gave an interview about how happy he is to be back, how good it is to see his teammates, what a positive season it's going to be for Liverpool. You can go look at on Getty off the images of him in training and stuff. Absolutely buzzing. Coutinho changed, and all the way through in Hong Kong, when Klopp's been talking about it, you look at his performances in the Asia Trophy.
Yeah, and everyone was doing the body language bollocks, and there was nothing wrong with his body language, there was nothing wrong with his performances.
He's had his head turned, hasn't he? Excellent in training in Germany and stuff. The fact of the matter is, the pressure on him has increased. And if you look around at Barca's other transfer business, if you just look at Dembele and at Borussia Dortmund, they can't negotiate a move for him. So the onus is on the player to force through the move. With Liverpool as well, FSG have made it clear, Klopp has made it clear, everyone's made it clear that they're not going to negotiate for Coutinho. So now they've put him in a situation where he's done the thing that he's actually not wanted to do. So Coutinho actually, it's not the worst thing in the world for him to stay at Liverpool. He was happy just on the 11th of July to be at Liverpool. He linked up well with Salah. He knows he can play really well with
everyone
with
else,
Firmino,
frankly.
Mane and everyone else, yeah. He knows he's the star of the team, the creative fulcrum. He's doing really well for Brazil, given how he's played for Liverpool. So you can see a way through, regardless of how hostile it becomes, and please think back to the Luis Suarez Arsenal scenario, you can find a way to work through it, because the most important thing is Liverpool Football Club, and they would be taking massive backward steps and giving themselves so much work to do with so little time that I don't know how anyone can come up with another solution.
The thing is, in all this, I see fans who are angry, and I understand why fans are angry, and I'm angry about the timing of it, because I think that's the worst thing about it is when he does it, and the fact that we've got that match and it's so important, and it's upsetting the apple cart at the worst possible time. But then if we wind back a little bit from that for a minute and go back to the thing again about these are human, these are normal people, he's a 25-year-old lad and all that sort of thing. If he's got all these people down his ear, which he obviously has, saying to him the only way you get your move to Barcelona in your life is if you make it happen right now, I might do it.
Yeah, no.
I might do it. Yep. But signing for Barcelona, for him, is probably the peak of his career.
When you force your way out, it's got to be forceful. You've got to give it maximum. You've got to put your transfer request
loyalty we have to our club isn't the loyalty players have. It's totally different. He's from Brazil. You know, the new camp, Barcelona, the players they've got, the reputation they've got.
But also home life. It might genuinely be that the family would rather be in a Spanish-speaking country, that they'd rather be in Barcelona, different climate, etc., etc. And I wonder whether
there's all that. He's been there before, when he was on loan. Yeah, when he was on loan, and his family love it there. Friends.
Bezzy's with the other bastard, Suarez, yeah.
Yeah. he's also lost. He's lost, like, his bigger brother in Lucas. The family, his family have lost now a social circle with Lucas going. You know, Moreno, there was all that talk of Moreno being sold. And, you know, that potentially could still happen, who knows.
Does he know the rubbish? Does he know that the rubbish?
And old.
It's for the family. Like, his wife, you know, would have been socialising with those people and stuff. And, she'd have more people to socialise with over there. So it is all these little elements that come into play. But I know, we're all annoyed when it happened, or at the timing of it and whatever, but from the other side, people have believed that FSG have been willing to sell him for the longest time, right? If they were, you wouldn't have to put in a transfer request. If they hadn't stuck to a very strong stance from the very beginning, he wouldn't have to force his way out. So there's one thing, the fact that they actually aren't willing to sell him, they haven't been willing to sell him. But the other is, everything that happens now, because I think there was a threat or something like, it will come out over the next few days about how poor the relationship has been between the manager and the player.
I wonder if there's
all that is noise to force the remove. Yeah. All that can be worked out.
I wonder if there's an alternative timeline as well here, though, you know what I mean? So is there an alternative reality where Liverpool got Van Dijk and they got Keita and they just sold him?
Well, you saw that happen with Torres. You know, the Suarez deal had already been lined up. We signed Suarez, and everyone's talking about, oh, we'll play Torres and Suarez together. Next day, Torres is sold.
And Suarez was told he'd be playing with Torres.
So we have seen that before with this ownership. It wouldn't surprise me if they do soften now, depending on what we're able to bring in. But I think I've got no problem with Coutinho throwing in a transfer request for the reasons you were saying before, Gareth. You know, it is the ultimate of, a South American's career potentially is to be going to your Barca or your Real Madrid. So I've got no problem with that, really. My problem is with the timing, but also this garbage about the relationship with the manager.
Well, that's his agent,
coming through one of his answers. I mean, you've seen the family picture of the answer. You've seen the one with when they're all in the Liverpool kit. There's about 30
exactly.
of them
yeah.
about a month ago.
Yeah.
You know, and it's obviously one of them who's allegedly spoken to Sky and this message. But I also think there's another factor here. There's the pressure being put on the lad from Barcelona. This kind of ultimatum of now or never, which is a load of tosh, isn't it? Really, they'll be back for him. But also, I think that there's obvious pressure from the agents, but I think it's heightened a little bit, actually, this summer. We're reaching a point, and we've been saying this for years, but I actually think it's got to be more true now, and there are signs that it is. We're reaching a point of it not being sustainable financially, what's happening. You look at what's happened with Neymar this summer, but aside from the Neymar issue and the odd oil club that are state-run, it's the Premier League that have massively inflated the market because of the amount of money coming in from the TV rights this season. But look what's happening with Sky. Look what they've lost. Look what they've not been able to bid for now that BT are on the scene. They financially, they can't go any further than what they've gone on this deal. I'll be very surprised if they're able to break it in the same way that they were for this deal. And I think there's probably a sense out there with it, with agencies thinking this summer actually could well be the height. I mean, I'll give you an example there. Everyone knows that Barcelona is swimming in cash because of the Neymar money. And they are desperate. Barcelona are absolutely desperate for some good PR for a signing. if Barcelona come calling for Coutinho next year and we've held on to him, do I think we'll get the same money? No. Absolutely not. I don't think that we'll get the same money. And not only that, the agent who's on a 10 to 20% commission there is not getting that same money. And the club as well have also, you know, when the dust settles here and there's 130 million bids on the table and there's a conversation around, you know what, next season, if we do keep him, it might only be 80 million, which might actually be a fairer reflection, more accurate reflection of talent when you take away all the inflation of what's going on this summer. There may well be a softening.
Just speaking on the money aspect, the element of it actually as well, Barcelona have that money. They're actually not willing. They're desperate. They have the money. They're desperate. But they haven't, in both scenarios with Dembele or with Coutinho, haven't put out a bid that actually turns a club's head and, you know, where a club is thinking, So that's why they're putting that's part of the reason why the onus is on the players to force it through, because they don't want to pay that top price. Mm. They want the situation to be as hostile as possible so they don't have to get to that, you know, to where they're having to...
Yeah, they haven't made a bid that you can't turn down.
Yeah.
They haven't gone, here's 130, and it's 130 up front.
Exactly. Their base offers have been laughable in the current climate. What was it? £72 million, and then it went to the base for the next one was £77 million. What is that money in the market at the moment when you're coming in for Liverpool's best player at this time when preparations... The first bid was made in Hong Kong just before the first Asia Trophy game. And preparations there have already intensified. You know, you've gone away on tour. You've recruited players in so you can push Coutinho back in midfield and he can, you know, then feed them. And you've done all these sort of things. You're also thinking about your transfer business and you're saying, okay, we want another midfielder, but remember we've also... got the ability now to play Coutinho in midfield because we've enhanced that forward line. So all of this stuff has gone on. Suddenly Barcelona, losing Neymar, think...
Yeah, and lost it against the wishes as well. You know what I mean? That's worth saying, isn't it? Yeah. Like, they didn't want him to go and you know, PSG bullied them and PSG had them off, had the kecks off. And now they want to say to world football, we can do that to Liverpool, though we are. And plus as well, I mean, if we think our fans are mad, their fans are mad, and their fans will have the president off and all kinds of, you know what I mean? If they don't do something this summer, that's why they're desperate as well, and that's why they're...
But they've left it so late, and leaving it late means you have to put up money if you want these things to happen, and they've just not put up the kind of money
But whatever the offer now, it's just, how useful is it? You've got 2 weeks to spend it, and you know, like we've already all said, Liverpool's struggling to spend what they've got anyway. What difference is another 130 in the bank, mate? Because wherever you go and try and spend that, you know, it's like you're trying to do supermarket sweep last minute. You know, wherever you go, the other club will just go, you're absolutely desperate here. Your fans are fuming. You've lost your best player or one of your best players.
What good there's has come huge, out of late desperation there's a huge buys premium. For Liverpool?
Yeah, Balotelli. So.
I think they expected us to be a soft touch because we have, in our dealings, arguably with Barcelona and Real Madrid before. You know, you look at the fees that were paid and the ease in which... people like Mascherano were able to leave the club. Suarez, I mean, Suarez, you look at the fee for Suarez and, you know, arguably it's the 65, isn't it? You know, it's not what we were told, which was about 10 million more. And you look at that and you think, even at the time that he left, that looked an absolute snip.
All of them didn't they? Yeah. Owen, Alonso.
Yeah, and they unsettled the player, they got the way, and I think they just probably thought they'd be able to go quite, you know...
Have we got to be more resilient, Stu? And by the we in this, I mean the supporters. Have we got to be more, like, you know, should we just be more like, we're rock hard, we don't care. We're backing everyone, we're going forward. Or are we right to all be flapping about?
I think we invest so much and we buy into the hope every year. You know, we buy into it, you know, in the summer. I think if this defeat happens in November, if it still feels... Oh, it's not even a defeat, was it? A draw. But if that happens in November, probably feels a little bit different. But it's the opening game of the season. Mm. And it's contextualised by the hope that we went into the market with, and how that's ebbed away. The frustration, mixed messages from the club of late, and then the Coutinho thing. And you wrap all that up in a bow, And it's hard to be resilient to that, Neil, isn't it? It's hard.
And all of a sudden now as well, you've got like what always, you know, the media thrives on negativity. The media thrives on conflict.
It does.
And you know, you look at headlines on newspapers every single day. Most of them are negative, and most of them are about conflict. And so right now, you know, and this applies to football as well. Right now, people are starting to knock Klopp now. You know, you had Joey Barton and Gobshite coming out over the weekend, calling him a German cheerleader and all the rest of it. You know, because obviously Joey's in a place where he can throw stones, isn't he? But I mean, you know, that's the start of it for me. That I saw that and thought, here we go. And I can see our fans doing it as well. All of a sudden now it's like, but is he that good though? Is he that good? And all of a sudden now we're doubting Klopp. Where it's gone from, he's still the same fella that we got. He's still the same fella with the same track record, the same fella who can play this football, that can blow teams away, that got us all that excited, that thought we were going to win the league, blah, 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 that got us to two finals. It's still the same fella. It's still literally the same fella.
He is still the same fella. I'd like to end the show there, but I can't because Liverpool kick off in less than 30 hours against Hoffenheim. Very, very quickly on this. It's one to get through, Mel. It's one to get the other side of. No Sturridge, no Coutinho in the squad. No Ben Woodburn either, which is quietly quite interesting, though we haven't got time to talk about it much now. It's you'd have thought you're going to see James Milner in some position or another. He may not go with Alexander-Arnold, although I'd like him to. I'm not seeing a number of other changes. I think it's the same front three. I think Henderson plays one of Chan and Wijnaldum. I'll probably keep Chan in and then go from there.
Yeah, it's not a lot you can do. I think, what's it, the second of five games in 15 days, so I think rotation will come later down the line when there's a little more tiredness and hopefully a lot more options in terms of having Sturridge back, having Coutinho back. It's critical now, not just because of Saturday, but also, like we've said, just in the wider context, to have a really positive game of football, performance-wise, result-wise. I think it's going to be a really difficult game, tactically taxing, but Liverpool should have enough to beat Hoffenheim.
Should have enough.
Yeah, I hope Milner plays left-back, away from home, in this game. I'd go with the security of that. I think that would be the right move. If he plays in midfield, I think I'll be climbing into the bath with the toaster to watch the game. I think other than that, I wouldn't really change an awful lot. By the way, just for the sake of Paul Senior's health, can I just say that Matip on the show has got away with absolutely murder today. Yeah, he's absolutely got away. And I know Paul Senior will be at home waiting for him to get slaughtered. I think Matip needs to up his game going away from home to Hoffenheim. I want to see him a good performance from him. I want to see a bit of leadership from the back from him, please.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, what I think is interesting about the, you know, when you talk, you'd put down on the agenda, we'll talk briefly about what Liverpool could do in Hoffenheim. Already we're saying, aren't we, there's not a lot of option. There's not a lot of option, and here we are. And this is why Liverpool still, if they can do something in this friggin' transfer window.
It's quite strange he's only bought nine players.
It is very strange that he's only bought nine players, because, you know, that and 21 have gone in the same time, by the way. So nine in, we're not counting Meninga and the other fella.
Colker.
So nine in and 21 gone. I mean,
You might be counting Meninga as one who's gone, so maybe it's 20 who's gone. Okay, I mean, not that it matters. I mean, this is the most splitting hairs thing ever.
I know. But I mean, ultimately, he hasn't brought many in. And there's been there's loads and loads and loads of fingers being pointed at FSG. And I think I can totally understand why, because you do start to wonder about competence, about getting deals done. And I don't think it's unfair. And also, as well, you look at the last time Liverpool reached the Champions League and what happened then. That was another disastrous window. You know, people are, I always go on about players are human, fans are human as well. And it's absolutely right to worry and go, well, here we go again. Are we going to blow another opportunity when we could be back at the top table? Why aren't we taking this chance? Because, you know, the Champions League was supposed to be this big golden light, wasn't it, where players want to come to us now and it means we've got this money and blah, 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 blah. And the fact we can't spend it, well, it's disappointing, isn't it?
All right, then. More to come on the Hoffenheim game. We've got a European preview show that Gareth's going to be on tonight with John, which is called Under the Lights. Made up with the name, to be honest with you. I'm normally rubbish at naming things. That's on Tour Player. It'll also be a gutter show on Tour Player, which I'm about to do right now with Mel. We're running a bit late, Mel, so I'll sum this up quite quickly. £5 a month for tons and tons and tons of fantastic Liverpool content. If you haven't thought about it, now would be a fantastic time to do so. I would recommend it highly. It's all great stuff. I'll be working our way through. We're doing, I think it's 7 shows today across the board, turning things around to get stuff out for you. That'll be out throughout the rest of the week. This has been the Anfield Wrap. I think it's been an absolute cracker in one sense. It's great that the football's back. Stu Wright, Mel Reddy, and Gareth Roberts. You can. Sports Social Podcast Network.